Hello and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. The sponsor of this week's show was U.S. Steel. They didn't need a catchy jingle. They wanted to remind America that they had a quality product, so they created a show of the highest caliber. Theater Guild on the Air adapted stage plays for the radio and featured some of the top stars of screen and stage. Frederick March plays the playwright who leaves his field of expertise when he falls in love, with hilarious results. Enjoy Theater Guild on the Air, No Time for Comedy, first broadcast March 9th, 1947 on ABC.
United States Steel, USS, the industrial family that serves the nation, presents the Theater Guild on the Air. Our stars, Frederick March and Florence Eldridge. Our play, No Time for Comedy, by S.N. Behrman. Produced on the air tonight by the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. In your home, in your business, in your travel. The trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. And now, from Broadway, direct from the stage of the Vanderbilt Theater, the United States Steel Corporation brings you No Time for Comedy by S.N. Behrman. And here is Roger Pryor speaking for the Theater Guild.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight's play, No Time for Comedy, is the story of the dilemma of a modern playwright who's expected to be gay and charming when all around him are grave social problems which he can't avoid. And the play is an excellent demonstration of how to solve that very problem. For in writing it, S.N. Behrman found it possible to be serious without sacrificing any of his delightful facility for high comedy. And now the Theater Guild on the Air is proud to present Frederick March and Florence Eldridge in No Time for Comedy with Walter Abel and Francis Fuller. That's applause. It's the applause of a first-night audience hailing a new play by a new playwright and introducing a new star. And would you like to hear what a new star sounds like when she's back in her dressing room after the applause has died down?
Oh, I'm dead.
And the new playwright, how do you suppose he sounds when he congratulates the new star?
Well, you certainly loused up Act One.
And this is how they sound in the automat at 3 a.m, reading the reviews together.
Listen to this, Gay. Listen to what Brooke says. Miss Linda Page is scintillating as the witty, charming, and graceful heroine. The play, though slow in getting underway, surely establishes Gaylord Estabrook as the most accomplished young writer of comedies around. Isn't that wonderful?
What does that guy mean, slow in getting underway?
He probably means I loused up Act One.
Oh, he does. Well, did he ever get up on that stage and try to act?
You said yourself I wasn't good in Act One.
Well, that's different. I wrote the play. Nobody could satisfy me in it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But you come close. If I were a critic, I'd say you were brilliant, charming, graceful, scintillating.
That's what he did say about me, thank heaven.
Well, he'd better save some adjectives for your next play. You know, I watched you out there tonight, Linda. And the way you moved, and the way you spoke, and the way you tossed that lovely head of yours. Linda.
Yes, Gay?
You're going to be in my next play.
Oh, I'm glad you like my work, Gay.
Your work? Nuts. I like you. You're going to be in my next play, you're going to be in my next incarnation, and you're going to be in my next apartment, by gosh.
Sir?
This is a proposal, Linda.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, Linda, I didn't even know myself what I've been leading up to all night, but this is it. We're for each other. We can play together, work together, laugh at each other. You and I, Linda...
I love you, mister. Do you know that?
I didn't, but...
No, you didn't. That's what scares me. Anyone could have seen it but you. He didn't pay any attention to me at all through 4 weeks of rehearsal. And now tonight we're both suddenly on top of the world, and it seems logical, the idea of you and me together. But what about tomorrow?
Tomorrow? Tomorrow we're getting married.
Well, there you are. On Broadway, marriages are made in the automat. And if you want any evidence that that is not exactly heaven, just listen. That's Mrs. Gaylord Estabrook telephoning Mr. Gaylord Estabrook. He left the apartment this morning to go to a studio and work out an idea for his second play. When he goes out to work, Mrs. Estabrook knows just where to find him.
Hello? Jack's Bar and Grill? Is Mr. Estabrook there? Well, if he comes in, have him call his wife. Thanks.
Linda, I've got it. I got the idea for the play. It came to me right in the middle of a martini. Hey, wait a minute. I never even finished the martini.
And so there was a second play. There was a third, too. But before Gay got the idea for that one, he did a lot of research in the Hotel Metropolis bar. The third play ran for a year and closed just last night. But Linda doesn't telephone him anymore. She has an assistant for that.
Hello, Eli Bar and Grill. Is Mr. Estabrook there? Well, when he gets there, ask him to call his apartment right away, please. Thank you. Miss Lindy, it ain't no use.
Have you gone through the list, Clementine?
Well, not quite.
You might try the club. Sometimes he feels athletic and goes to the club for a fast workout and gets stuck at the bar.
Oh, I tried the club. He's a chore, that man, and that's a fact.
You understate it.
Oh, but he's a natural, honey. I guess hopping mad at him. But when he shows up, I just love him.
That somewhat duplicates my experience.
Honey, maybe this is him now. Hello. Yes, Miss Lindy ain't here. And anyway, she don't want to talk to no one. Especially no playwrights, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Gaylord, he's got a play for her. That's right. Goodbye.
If Gay doesn't come up with an idea pretty soon, I'll have to start being nice to other writers.
Now, don't you worry, Miss Lindy, honey. He's always wrote a play for you, and he always will. After the bars run out of olives for his martinis.
I don't understand where he can be, Clementine. He must have found a new place.
Oh, maybe not. There's still some numbers on the list I ain't called yet. Now, let me see. Oh, botheration. Hello? Oh, hello, Mr. Coward. No, Miss Lindy ain't here. And she ain't interested in doing a play by anybody but Mr. Gaylord. He's writing one for her right now. So what you laughing about? Oh, fresh guy.
This is our busy day.
Hello? Who? Mr. Smith? Well, is you a writer? Is you a producer? Is you an actor? Oh, you is a banker. You better talk to this one, Miss Lindy.
Hello? Oh, Mr. Philo Smith. Well, I'm delighted to hear from you, Mr. Smith. It's rather unexpected, of course, but... You're downstairs. Well, come right up.
Oh, banker. Now, ain't that something? If there's anything I like, is a well-to-do millionaire.
Clementine.
Yes, Miss Lindy?
You might just try Max on 49th Street.
Yes, ma'am. I got it right here on the list.
And if you have time, Murray's on 55th, I think it is. Yes, that's right, 55th Street.
All right. Hello. Is this Max? Well, is Mr. Estabrook there? Well, has you seen him today? Is you his friend? Is you the bartender? Well, has he been there today? Well, when he comes and ask him to call his apartment right away, please. It's very important. Oh, he's sure to be fried wherever he is.
There's Mr. Smith.
Okay, I won't keep no banker waiting.
Good evening.
Come right in, please.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, how do you do? I'm very glad to see you.
Thank you.
Sit down, won't you?
Yes, thank you very much.
I'm Miss Lindy. You want me to do some more calling in the other room?
Yes, I wish you would, Clementine.
Well, I think it's too early to try to find him in those joints on Third Avenue.
All right, Clementine.
Yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Smith.
Well, Miss Page.
Off the stage is Mrs. Estabrook.
Of course. Well, you must be surprised at my visit.
Yes, and very flattered. I came away from the Wireless dinner party the other night with a feeling that you'd made me talk a good deal and that you'd listen very little.
You are mistaken. I made you talk because I found you fascinating.
Oh, now I'm more flattered than ever.
It's not often that a plain man of business meets someone as beautiful as you.
Mr. Smith, the speeches you make. You should get about more. I'm sure you'd be a great social success.
I'm not making speeches. I'm a businessman. I deal in facts. It's a fact that you're beautiful. I wish you weren't. It's much too disturbing.
Mr. Smith, you're a man of power. Don't you suppose I find your power disturbing?
I hope so. But what looks like power from the outside may be only a complex of strains and stresses from the inside.
I met your wife for a moment the other evening. She's lovely.
You imply she is one of the strains and stresses?
I don't know in the least what made me speak of her just now.
Your intuition.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't be. After all, what about your husband?
I beg your pardon?
Now, I'm sorry. But I heard what your maid said about telephoning.
Oh, that. My husband's between ideas, and when he's between ideas, he makes an alcoholic tour of the town. It makes him forget he's between ideas. This is a list of his haunts. You know, it's rather a game to track him down.
This list of telephone numbers, may I add a number to it?
What are you doing?
Writing the number where you can reach your husband. There you are, Regent 59777.
What place is that?
It's my house.
Really?
Yes.
I see. So you didn't come here just to see me?
Only partly.
But I didn't know that Gay and your wife...
It's quite true.
Well, I'm greatly relieved. I'm relieved to know he's not on a binge.
You are very much in love with him.
I am. How did you know?
The other evening at the Weilers, you let it drop.
I talked too much.
Not for me.
But I didn't know that... Gay never met your wife till that dinner at the Weilers, did he?
He's known her for several months.
Really?
Yes.
Stupid of him not to tell me. Your wife's very charming. I should have loved... She's quite young, isn't she?
Yes, she's my second wife.
How long have you been married?
5 years.
Are you very much in love?
Let's say I shouldn't like to be divorced a second time. It gets to be undignified.
Is that what you came to tell me? Why don't you tell it to your wife?
I don't discuss things with my wife. We're beyond that stage. And you perhaps don't understand that I've come here not to warn you, but through you, your husband.
Of what?
Quite casually, my wife made about your husband a single remark. Knowing her as I do, this remark revealed to me in all clarity the danger your husband is in.
What was the remark?
She said of your husband that he had latent possibilities as yet unrealized. I knew then that his position was perilous.
Why?
My wife has a passion for developing latent possibilities. When they are not there, she invents them. Her first husband was a mediocre but amiable man whom she utterly ruined by persuading him he was first rate.
Oh, my husband's not mediocre. My husband's brilliant.
Then she will persuade him that he's profound.
Oh, that is dangerous.
I'm afraid I've taken up a great deal of your time, Miss Page.
Mrs. Estabrook.
Sorry. I wish it were Miss Page. Well, I'll go now. I hope you will soon be doing a play. I shall come to see it.
Thank you. A play's what I need most in life. I hope your wife will inspire my husband to write one.
It's quite possible. My wife loves to inspire. Good evening.
Hello, Clementine. This is Pim Lovell. And I want to speak to Miss Linda without first hearing your routine about how she doesn't want to hear from any stage directors. Fine. Hello, Linda. Pim. I'm calling just to let you refuse to go to dinner with me again. But you will? Tonight? What's happened, Linda? Have you discovered finally what an unworthy husband you've got? I don't suppose this sudden change of heart would mean you'd be willing to discuss a wonderful play I know about, not written by Gaylord Estabrook. Boy, this is my lucky day. Maybe I'm pushing my luck too far, but I'm going to hold hands with you, see if the ice will melt. So long.
You're home, Gay. Let me smell your breath.
Cold sober.
That's what I was afraid of.
What?
I was afraid you'd be sober.
Really, darling, you're getting too modern.
Did you work today?
No.
Try?
I tried, and I couldn't.
You didn't work, you didn't drink. What did you do, Gay?
Thought.
About what?
About how I've got nothing to write about.
Oh, but you write about it so charmingly.
Oh, I'm sick of that. It's no time for that.
There never was such a time.
You live in an aura of exhibitionism where you couldn't possibly say a thing like that. Look around you. Pick up a newspaper. Look at the world. How can I go on babbling lightly in a never-never land?
Oh, you underestimate yourself. Your plays are gay, they're gallant and witty. They're touching. Write another.
Darling, in 100 countries, death is coming to little children by slow starvation, and you expect me to sit in my room contriving stage situations for you to be witty in.
You're world-weary, aren't you, Precious?
Yes, Linda. I wonder if I'll ever write a play
again.
Oh,
you know you will. You felt this way before.
I have, haven't I? And always before, Linda, you've been able to pull me out of it.
Give me a chance to do it this time, Gay.
Oh, Linda, let me look at you. You're sweet, you know that? You're sweet and wise, and you used to be easy to talk to. Why aren't you easy to talk to right now, Linda?
That's a very good question, Gay.
I guess it's because I'm ashamed before you.
Ashamed of what, Gay?
Trying to overreach myself, of wanting to write something that's beyond me.
That's all, Gay?
That's all. I'm stupid. I don't know anything.
I don't know anything either.
Well, you're an actress. You don't have to. Anyway, you're prettier than I am.
Oh, I don't know. You're not bad. I thought you were beautiful.
Darling.
Darling.
Dearest, I'm blue. God, I'm low. I'm sunk. I'm so bored with myself.
Perhaps that just means you're bored with me.
Oh, you, darling, you're beautiful. You're wonderful.
Nevertheless.
How long have we been married?
I'm always telling you to the day. Now, for once, you guess.
I don't know. Forever?
So long?
I mean, I don't remember not being married to you. What did I do before?
You were married.
Oh, well, that was just an adolescent miscalculation.
Perhaps this is a miscalculation of your maturity.
I get lonely for you walking in the street.
You get over it when you come home.
Let's go out for dinner.
I've made a dinner date.
Oh, have you?
Well, I had no way of knowing whether you were coming home or not. I didn't feel in the mood for eating alone.
Who is?
Pim Lovell.
Oh, no.
I like Pim. He's a nice boy and a very good director.
All right, all right.
Gay, let's stop stalling, shall we?
What do you mean?
I mean, Gay, why don't you tell me what's really bothering you?
Here we go. This is the phase of you that I hate, Linda.
Why?
Well, you're so all-seeing, so all-wise, so clairvoyant, and so wrong. What's really bothering me is just what I've said is bothering me. I haven't got anything to write about.
Who told you that?
Who?
Yes, who? You know, Gay, you're full of the signs of the weary husband.
Weary playwright?
No, weary husband. Why didn't you come to the closing last night?
It never occurred to me.
The last performance of your own play, your last chance to see it.
It's a rotten play.
And your last chance to see me in it.
Oh, Linda, I'm awfully sorry. I never even thought
Gay,
that you...
are we washed up?
Don't say that, Linda.
Why not?
Well, sometimes by prophesying, you make the undesirable come true.
Not quite. No, I should want a little help from the outside. I imagine I'm getting it.
And what's behind that dark innuendo?
A, you come home cold sober. B, your abrupt concern over cosmic misery makes me guess you have one less cosmic.
Oh, it does.
Yes. And I'd like very much to know who she is, this Miss Cosmos. Or perhaps Mrs. Cosmos.
Look, what do you mean by all this?
What I mean is obvious. Whom I mean, I don't know. You'd have to tell me that, darling.
I have nothing to tell you.
All right. I better go dress for Pim. How do you like my new hat?
Hedda Hopper will drop dead.
Fine. I'll wear it.
Mrs. Cosmos, indeed.
Say, boss.
Yeah?
Boss, what's this new place?
What are you talking about?
Well, here on the list of bars that we call you at, there's this new number. But it don't say what bar it is.
Well, what's the number?
Region 59777.
What?
Region 597...
Let me see that list. Who gave you that number?
Well, I'm trying to tell you, boss. I don't know nothing about it. Didn't you put it down here?
I certainly did not.
Well, then Miss Linda must have.
That's all I wanted to know. I'm going out.
Well, what time will you be back?
I may never be back.
Well, where are you going in case we want to reach
you? I'm going to Region 59777. You can tell that to my wife when she's finished dressing for her date.
You are listening to No Time for Comedy, produced by the Theater Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. We're sorry to say that because of illness, George Hicks cannot be with us tonight. And so here, speaking for United States Steel, is Gordon Fraser.
Good evening. From time to time, George Hicks has talked to you about how large-scale research and development work goes on constantly at United States Steel and throughout the steel industry in order to provide you with improved steels and products of steel. Tonight, I'd like to tell you about another vitally important way in which this research and development work helps you, and that is by increasing the average life of steel. Back in 1901, when the United States Steel Corporation was founded, The average life of all the many kinds of steel products in America, according to estimates prepared by students of the subject, was about 18 years. Today, similar methods of study indicate that average life is more than 36 years. In other words, steel, on the average, lasts twice as long today as it did at the turn of the century. And you don't have to be very expert at arithmetic to realize that this increased life means greatly increased value. There are many factors responsible for lengthening the life of steel in America. One is the elimination of impurities, which makes steel susceptible to rust. Another is the improved processes for coating steel with tin, zinc, vitreous enamel, and other materials highly resistant to corrosion. Still another is the great strides made in the development of rust-resistant paints and lacquers. But most important of all is the development of the corrosion-resistant alloy steels, together with the remarkable refinements of steel manufacture and the rigid tests that steel products must pass before leaving the mills. These measures result in far fewer failures after the steel is put to work, far longer average life. United States Steel has long been one of the leaders of the steel industry in the research and development work that has made possible this constant lengthening of the life of steel. Today and tomorrow, this work goes on at an ever-expanding rate so that you, the American consumer, will get constantly better value in everything you buy made of steel. That's one of the basic policies that guides the United States Steel Corporation. That's one of the excellent reasons why it will pay you to look for the USS label on anything you buy made of steel.
We pause now for station identification.
Your station is KECA, Los Angeles.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of No Time for Comedy, starring Frederick March as Gay and Florence Eldridge as Linda, and featuring Walter Abel as Philo and Frances Fuller as Amanda. That music you hear is by Schubert, and it's coming from a radio phonograph cunningly concealed in a cabinet in the drawing room of Philo Smith's apartment. Philo Smith isn't around. There's just his wife, Amanda, beautiful in a flowing gown as she leans back against the cabinet and looks down at Gaylord Estabrook, who's on a French divan inhaling a brandy. As the music ceases,
that.
Schubert.
Sounded so effortless. Do you suppose he sweated over it?
Oh, I imagine not. Music poured out of him. He died at 31 and left over 600 works.
A lucky boy, on both counts. He left something fabulous in the way of an estate, didn't he? A few towels and some bed linen. I read that in the program notes at the Philharmonic. That's where I get my musical culture. I wonder if Schubert could have gotten a job in Hollywood.
You're bitter, Gay.
Maybe.
This bitterness is what I miss in your plays.
Perhaps my plays are my ivory tower, my escape.
Oh, no, Gay. The truth is, you coddle yourself. You're lazy. And you permit yourself to be diverted by circumstances.
What circumstances?
You'll misunderstand me.
What do you care?
Well, then, the circumstance that you're married to a very successful actress of comedy. And that you've written your plays not to express yourself, but to express her. Now, this is the first time, really, that you've broken away from, well, that circumstance in your work. Did you tell her, by the way?
No.
Oh, you have to tell her, you know.
She's been waiting for 6 months for a play by me. I simply can't bear to tell her that there's no part for her in my new one.
I don't see why. You didn't set out not to write a part for her. You set out to do a serious play. Now, that there'll be no part for her in it is sad. It's also significant. I must sound horrid.
You do like the first act curtain, don't you?
It's breathtaking. The suspense of it is really thrilling. Will he go into that room, or won't he?
What'll he do, though, after he gets into the room?
mean after the father sees him?
No, no, it's impossible. It's a false alarm. It's one of those flashy ideas that sound marvelous.
I don't believe it.
I'm washed up, Mandy. It's no good. It's lousy.
Oh. Now, just sit down quietly here beside me.
That's easy.
Now, be calm. Think of your whole idea. A play about death, about the meaning of immortality. A father whose son has been killed in the war begins to hear from that son at night, sees him in visions. He becomes a convert to mysticism, and because he's a great scientist, a Nobel Prize winner, his conversion becomes an international sensation.
Grief-stricken people follow him as though he were a messiah.
Yes. And then a young man, a victim of amnesia, hears him speak, and suddenly his memory comes back. This scientist is his father. Oh, Gay, when your audience realizes that the boy is not dead at all, that the whole basis for the man's mysticism is non-existent.
It is good, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And then when the boy goes to his father's home and sits waiting for his father, and he suddenly realizes that his father has a new career based on the fact of his death, then he wonders, will his father want to see him? Wouldn't it be better to pretend to be dead? And then the butler announces that the father has returned, that he's in the next room waiting to receive his visitor.
Shall he face him, or shall he go away? The boy hesitates, his hand on the latch of the door. Curtain!
And what a curtain!
Mandy!
Yes, Gay?
I got it. I've got the second act, Mandy.
Gay, darling.
Oh, Mandy, you wonderful, adorable creature. I've got it. You've given it
to
me.
I'm so excited. What is it?
The boy doesn't leave the house.
No?
He goes in to see his father. His face is all patched up, half of it shot away.
And the father doesn't recognize him.
The father doesn't recognize him. But there's one person who does recognize him. One person he can't fool.
Who?
His sweetheart, the girl he left behind him. And when she finds out and the audience knows she's found out, that's my curtain for the second act.
It's wonderful.
I think it's good. I think it'll hold. What do you think?
It's marvelous.
It'll give me a third act, too. I'm sure it'll give
me
a third.
I know it will.
Oh, Mandy, I love you.
Oh, no, Gay.
I do love you. Come here, darling.
No, no.
Oh, yes, you're so good for me.
Oh, Gay, I don't ask for this. All I want is to help you express yourself.
Well, that's all that I want, Mandy. Oh, Mandy.
Oh, Gay.
Coffee, Linda?
No, thanks, Pim.
Okay. Ready to divorce Gay, Linda?
No, Pim, darling, and stop covering my hand with yours.
Oh, all right. But something's on your mind. You're pretty thoughtful. You're sad. You seem lonely. It's really a very hopeful sign, Linda.
Oh, stop chattering, Pim.
All right. Shall we talk about the play I have for you?
Talk about anything you want except your deathless love for me.
All right. This play is tailor-made for you, Linda. You don't know the writer. He's a young protege of mine I keep locked in a hotel room. But he's written a play.
Pim.
What?
Do you know Philo Smith?
You weren't listening
to
me.
Do you know Philo Smith?
The banker? Slightly.
Do you know his wife?
Only too well.
I want to go to her house tonight.
Why?
Can you arrange it?
I don't want to.
But can you arrange it? Waiter.
Linda, I detest Amanda Smith.
Yes, madam?
Will you please bring a telephone to this table?
Immediately, madam.
Linda, Amanda Smith is... Well, she once almost persuaded me I was a genius. I almost gave up a good-paying job for her.
Here's the phone, madam.
Call her up, Pim.
All right. Hello, get me Regent 59777, please. Linda, the things I do for you...
Tell me, Pim, when Amanda was telling you you were a genius, what saved you?
She wouldn't neck. Oh, hello, Amanda. This is Pim Lovell. Mandy, darling, I've been seized with an uncontrollable desire to see you. May I come over? Oh, yes, you let me, because otherwise I'll force my way in. Besides, I've got someone with me you just love to meet. Linda Page. You would like to meet her, wouldn't you, ma'am?
Oh, why, yes, I would like to meet her. Yes, you may come. Say in half an hour. Goodbye.
Who is that, Mandy?
Oh, no one you know, Gay, darling.
Someone coming here?
Yes, I had to let them come under the circumstances. Gay, darling, why don't you work on your play?
Well, I'd like to, but if these people are coming...
Well, you can work in the library.
All right. All right, but come in there with me, won't you, Mandy, until they get here?
How do you do? Oh, you're Mrs. Estabrook, aren't you?
Yes.
And I'm Mr. Lovell.
Yes, Mrs. Smith is expecting you. Won't you come in?
Thank you.
Yeah.
This way, please. If you just sit down here.
Thank you.
Mrs. Smith asked me to tell you that Mr. Estabrook is in the library working and was on no account to be disturbed.
Oh? And where is Mrs. Smith?
In the library.
Where?
I'll tell you, you've arrived.
Well, so Gay is here. You knew it all along.
Of course. Pim, leave me alone with Mrs. Smith.
Certainly not.
Get an attack of something and say you have to go home. Please, darling, leave me alone with her.
You hope to retrieve Gay, don't you?
Yes.
Well, if you don't retrieve him, will you call me the moment you get back?
Yes.
Promise?
Yes.
Right. The terms are humiliating in a way, but then we Lovells are patient. An ancestor of mine waited half a century for a stubborn woman, married her at 70, and gave her 3 children.
How good of you to come.
How nice of you to have me.
Tim, darling, how are you?
How are you, Pat?
Oh, do sit down. You know, I've asked Gay often to bring you. Has he never told you?
As a matter of fact, no, I don't think he has.
Oh, well, how very neglectful of him. But then, well, I don't suppose we should expect ordinary punctiliousness from a genius.
Oh, why not?
You're not a genius, Tim, dear. You'd know, wouldn't he, Linda? Oh, do you mind if I call you Linda? I feel I know you so well.
Of course.
Call me Mandy. We were sitting here quietly after dinner when Gay suddenly had an idea, and nothing would do but he must rush into the library and set it down.
Sounds very rude.
Oh, he doesn't understand, does he, Linda?
Not in the least.
Well, if everybody jumped up and rushed into seclusion whenever any sort of an idea struck them, what would become of social life?
Pim?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Well, now I shall leave you two adorable creatures together to scratch each other's eyes out.
You're not going.
I am, indeed.
But why? You just come.
Yes, I know, but I've just been struck by an idea. I've got to go somewhere private and put it down. You see, Mandy, I am a genius.
Oh, really, Pim?
Besides, I asked him not to stay. Good night, Pim.
Good night, Linda. Night, Mandy.
Good night, you funny boy. I adore Pim, don't you, Linda?
Yes, but that's not what I want to talk about. Gay's in your library working, isn't he? May I ask what he's working on?
His new play.
Really? I didn't know he had a new play.
Really? Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, it's quite all right. I'm delighted, naturally. Do you know what it's about?
It's about immortality.
Really?
Yes.
What on earth does Gay know about immortality?
What does anyone know about immortality, except by intuition?
But Gay, you do know his other work.
But this is altogether different from his other work. It's profounder, richer. I think it's great. I think you'll be proud.
Why didn't he tell me about it, do you suppose?
Because...
Why?
No, I mustn't say it.
Oh, but you must. Please. Mandy.
Well, I'm afraid you'll misunderstand my motive.
Oh, but I assure you I won't. I'll understand it perfectly.
Because there's no part in it for you.
But that's so silly. Oh, I love playing in Gay's plays. I love speaking his lines. But if he's written a play and it's good, I should be very happy. Surely he knows that.
Well, perhaps he thought that...
What?
That you wouldn't be sympathetic to this play.
But why shouldn't I be? Oh, I'm really hurt.
Oh, I am sorry. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said...
But you're not in the least sorry. You've probably never in your life been so ecstatically happy as you are at this moment.
But really, Mrs. Estabrook...
Call me Linda. Shall we be honest with each other? It's enormously difficult, I know, but shall we try? You enjoy inspiring Gay.
Yes.
That is to say, you enjoy lovemaking with him. I understand that perfectly.
Oh, but that's not true. We haven't. That's not true.
Well, if it's not true already, then it's imminent. All right. I'm jealous, but all right. Let him make love to you if you like, but for pity's sake, don't ruin his style. Immortality. Oh, really, Mandy.
We have nothing in common.
What about Gay?
Now, in my puny way, I've been trying to bring Gay's work in relation to the period in which he's living. His work is brilliant, but I've told him so myself. Trivial.
Why, because he writes comedy? I'd rather have him write trivial comedy than shallow tragedy. The truth is, Mandy, you see yourself as an influence with a capital I.
I do. I'm not ashamed of it.
If this play you're drawing out of Gay like a bad tooth turns out to be good, I'll never forgive you, Mandy.
Well, you're honest at any rate.
Yes? Why don't you try it? Just for the novelty.
I beg your pardon?
Well, you don't believe this act of yours, do you? Oh, you can't possibly. You've got Gay through this rainbow belief in the profundity of his literary
powers. He told me you were like this. Clairvoyant, full of pitiless clarity.
Oh, you make me sound like an X-ray.
You are. You've shriveled him.
Is Gay shriveled? He looked awfully well this afternoon.
In his soul. But you don't believe in faith or hope. You don't believe in anything but empty laughter. You're merciless and destructive. If I have furnished him with an oasis where he can escape to brood and dream, I'm happy, do you hear? Proud and happy.
You believe it.
Oh, I'm shocked.
It's inconceivable to you that anyone can be sincere. You don't understand the truth. You attribute the most sordid motives to everything. You're horrid. You're hateful and horrid, and I hate you. I won't stay here with you. Oh, Gay.
Mandy.
Gay, Gay, darling.
What's the matter, Mandy?
It's your wife.
My wife?
Oh, she's here. She's in the drawing room. She's a terrible woman.
I'm going to see what this is all about.
Oh, no. No, come back, Gay.
Linda.
Yes, Gay.
What have you done to Mandy?
Disfigured her beyond recognition. Scratched her eyes out. Didn't you notice?
What'd you say to her?
Don't remember.
She's sobbing.
How nice for her. I wish I could.
You spy on me. And you must have said something unforgivable to Mandy. I know your capacity for that. She's devastated.
Not so devastated that she lost her sense of direction. She made straight for the library.
This is the end, Linda. The end. I can't stand it anymore. I can't stand you anymore. Your beautiful superiority. I loathe it. I'm sick of it. You can't be even humanly jealous.
That's what you think.
Mandy's human, at least.
Obviously.
I hate your detachment. I hate your coolness. I hate your destructive, critical nature.
You've acquired Mandy's vocabulary. Pity. So cliche.
I'm going to marry Mandy.
My blessing.
You think I'm joking?
I think you're childish.
Yeah, I know you.
Your most endearing trait.
I'm going to marry Mandy.
But why? You're not in love with her. Oh, I simply can't believe you're in love with her.
I am.
Would you love me, Gay, if I praised you for qualities you haven't got? Would you love me if I could cry? I'll practice.
Always clear, always articulate, a cold, clean light.
No vaguely lit oasis like this that Mandy offers. And I'm helpless against her. What can I do?
Oh, I'll tell you what you can do. You can preen yourself. You can revel in your superiority. You can pity us for the childish emotion which has involved us. You don't need me. You don't need anybody. You're self-sufficient.
Oh, Gay, darling, don't say things like that to
me. You can return to gaze at yourself forever in a full-length mirror.
Gay, what is it? You're miserable. This isn't the ecstasy of newfound love.
It is.
Oh, Gay.
No, no, don't come near me. Don't question me. I can't bear you, I tell you. I'm going into Mandy. And quit spying on us.
Well.
Good evening.
Oh, Mr. Smith, I'm delighted to see you.
Thank you. Roberts told me you were downstairs.
And you
here.
Came to see me?
Exactly.
That was so nice of you. I've never been so glad to see anyone in all my life.
You're impulsive.
I feel as if I'd known you forever.
I wish you had.
I've just found out you were right, Mr. Smith, this afternoon. Your wife and my husband are engaged.
Your poor husband.
He can talk out his misery to her because she isn't his wife, and he can't talk to me because I am. Now, why is that, do you suppose? Why can't married people talk to each other?
Don't ask me metaphysical questions.
Well, I'm... I'm going to fight. Will you help me?
Up to a point.
Are you sleepy?
If I were, I wouldn't have come down.
Do you play games?
I play chess.
I might have known. Do you play gin rummy?
Yes.
Will you play gin rummy with me?
It'll be a pleasure.
You see, Mr. Smith, I can't possibly leave this house tonight without first saying goodnight to my hostess. And I can't possibly interrupt her just now. She and Gay are collaborating so hard, I mustn't interrupt the creative process. At the same time, I don't mind telling you I want a good chance to outstay her.
Very well.
Philo, you're a darling.
Don't be familiar.
I'm not keeping you up by any chance.
You already have.
What?
It's way past my bedtime. Why do you suppose I came downstairs?
Philo, this is so sudden.
Miss Page.
Mrs. Estabrook.
No, hang it all, Miss Page. I love you. And hang it all, do we have to play gin rummy?
You are listening to No Time for Comedy, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here again, speaking for United States Steel, is Gordon Frazier.
One of the most important things about any business is whether it's a good place to work. The welfare of its workers is a vital concern to every worthwhile American business. And the United States Steel Corporation has always been a leader in making its plants and mills and offices better working places for its employees. Improved physical conditions, safety campaigns, health programs, recreational facilities, and increased opportunities for training and advancement are just a few of the things that the United States Steel family has provided. This has been going on for years, and the results could be proved by, well, any number of figures, but it seems to me that the best evidence of success is the great number of families who've chosen to work for United States Steel. Fathers and sons, brothers and sisters, who know from their continued experience that United States Steel is a good place to work. For instance, take the McKinneys of Homestead, Pennsylvania. Dad McKinney worked for United States Steel for 50 years, and today his husky sons, all eight of them, are expert steelmen in the Homestead Works of Carnegie, Illinois, one of the members of the United States Steel family. Already the McKinney boys have piled up a total of 138 years' service. There are others, the Pitts family of Columbia Steel, a father and three sons, the Sarasso family of Vandegrift Works, three brothers, two daughters, and a son, the four Ortiz brothers of United States Steel Supply, the Flowers family, a father, five sons, and two daughters, all employees of the Tennessee Coal, Iron, and Railroad Company, the seven Beatty brothers of Clairton Works, the seven Weaver brothers, and the seven White brothers, all of H.C. Frick Coke Company. And there are numerous others, hundreds and hundreds of families, who know from experience that United States Steel is a good place to work. Living up to its responsibility to these loyal families, as well as to all its other workers, is one of the goals of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the third act of No Time for Comedy, starring Frederick March and Florence Eldridge, and featuring Walter Abel and Francis Fuller.
Come right in. Sit down, won't you, Mandy?
Thank you.
It seems to me a great gap of time since last night, does it to you?
Not really. I'm afraid I was awfully rude.
If I remember correctly, I was insufferable.
Oh, Linda, dear.
Last night you opened up new vistas to me. Supposing that in your library, Gay was giving birth, with you as midwife, to a masterpiece. This, I thought, might be one of those very great occasions that love makes, and here was I standing in the way. I wavered. I retreated. I took myself away.
Well, I came back to apologize, but you'd gone.
I came back here and called up Pim. He sat up till dawn, holding my hand. Gay never came home.
Oh, didn't he?
You seem greatly relieved.
Well, then you haven't seen him?
No, haven't you?
No. Well, I'm sure he'd be here. Oh, I'm really frightfully worried. I called his studio. There was no answer. Suppose something's happened
to
him.
Oh, he's all right. I've heard from him.
Oh, have you? Did he telephone?
No, he sent me his play.
Oh, well?
Well, it's only one act, really, and an outline of the rest.
Oh, but surely you can tell.
It's very interesting.
You don't like it. I feel you don't.
Well, it's so out of Gay's normal vein that I must say I was a bit startled. Perhaps it's not my dish.
He always felt that you wouldn't be sympathetic to it. Linda, I have something to tell you.
Have you?
Yes, it's an awful thing. I don't know how to put it. I really don't. You make it impossible for me.
Oh, nothing's impossible for you, Mandy.
I wish, Linda, I didn't like you so very, very much.
You'll end, I'm sure, by not letting your affection for me stand in your way. What is it?
Well, Gay and I...
Yes?
Gay and I...
I suspected it.
Oh, no, it's not that. It's worse from your point of view. Oh, believe me, Linda, I struggled against this. Only last night I told him we ought never to see each other again. His play was well on the way, my usefulness over. I entreated him to return to you. And then suddenly, out of a clear sky, he asked me to marry him.
Infallible technique.
Oh, that's unworthy of you, Linda.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm really frightfully worried about Gay.
Oh, you must get used to these little disappearances. If you find him elusive as a lover, as a husband, he's practically non-existent.
Oh.
It may be Gay. Hello? Oh, hello, Philo. Yes. Not at all. Anytime, Philo, naturally. Goodbye.
Philo? Not Philo.
Yes.
Well, when Robert told me last night that Philo came downstairs, I couldn't believe it.
Is that so irregular?
Irregular? It's a revolution. What did you do?
Well, we started to play gin rummy.
He likes you.
Do you mind?
No. As a matter of fact, it just frightens me. You and Philo, made for each other.
Do you think so?
Yes. Both strong, self-reliant, ambitious, and you have this in common. You know what you want and you go after it.
Oh, I shouldn't say in your quiet way that you lack tenacity.
Oh, it's going to be so difficult. Philo's so old-fashioned. He'll never give me a divorce unless...
Well, I
just had a curious idea, a curious hunch that you might persuade him.
Did you really?
Yes. Why prolong a marriage that's outlived its, well, its validity? You, I feel sure, might shame him by your example.
What makes you think I'm willing to give up Gay?
Because you're a big person, Linda.
Oh, it's not a question of size.
Gay no longer loves you, Linda.
I'm not convinced.
He loves me.
Perhaps he does.
He told me so. He asked me to marry him. Oh, Gay, dear, where have you been?
What are you doing here, Amanda?
Oh, I was frantic. You were to telephone.
I did.
When?
Just now.
But you were to call me at noon. I waited hours. I couldn't get you at the studio.
I wasn't at the studio.
Well, I was sure you must be here. I didn't know what to do.
So you came here. You spied. I resent your spying on me. I won't be spied on.
Oh.
And don't cry.
Now, see here, Gay.
What do you want, Linda?
I want you to be nice to Mandy. After all, you're not married to her yet.
Now, you keep out of this, Linda.
Well, just remember that Mandy's not me, you know. She's not used to your infantile tantrums.
Please don't give me any of your Olympian advice. I came here to pack and get my things out of here once and for all.
Oh, really, Gay?
Does your heart good, doesn't it, Mandy? I'll get your things, Gay.
Don't touch my things!
Very well, I shan't touch your things. And I'll leave you and Mandy alone. Oh, and Mandy...
Yes, Linda?
Never touch his things.
Gay, are you really leaving this house?
Yes, Mandy.
I'm so glad.
I'm leaving town, too, Amanda.
Oh?
Will you come with me?
Oh, yes, Gay, yes.
I'm going overseas.
What?
I'm going overseas. You still want to come?
Well, where are you going? England?
Poland.
Poland?
Yes, I'm going to do freelance reporting. I want to see what's going on in places where people are really suffering.
Oh, I see.
Well, it was your idea that I should do that.
You sound rough, Gay.
Do you want to come to Poland?
Yes. Oh, yes, Gay. Wherever you go.
All right. Now, look, Amanda. Why don't you wait for me downstairs in the cocktail lounge? I have to get my passport and
oh,
get
no,
packed.
Oh, well, I don't mind waiting here.
For heaven's sake, haven't you any delicacy? You're taking a woman's husband and you want to stay in her house while he packs.
Oh, Gay.
I'm sorry, Amanda, but wait downstairs, will you?
Yes, Gay.
Come in. Oh, Gay.
Hello.
Where's Mandy?
She's downstairs in the cocktail lounge.
Did you send her away?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad.
You have no reason to be. I sent her down there to wait for me.
Oh, you thought it was indelicate for her to be here.
Oh, cut it out, Linda.
All right. She tells me you're going to be married.
Yes. Yes, we're going to Poland.
Peculiar place for a honeymoon.
I'm going to be a reporter. I want to see life.
Good idea. But why Poland? I might even add, if I were malicious, why Mandy?
I'll tell you why. To get away from you.
But the world is wide.
It's not wide. It's narrow. It's close. It's a closet. I'm shutting it with you. And I've got claustrophobia. I've got to get away from you. I've got to break your hold on me. I've got to marry Mandy or somebody because it's the only way I can be unfaithful to you.
Darling, that's the sweetest thing you ever said to me.
You're being very funny, aren't you?
Not at all. I had no idea we were so close. I had no idea we were in a closet together. I really had. I thought you were unfaithful to me regularly and with ease. Oh, I'm delighted to discover that you have to marry to achieve it. Seems a cumbersome method, but I must say I'm highly flattered. Oh, thank you, darling.
Now, look, have you read my play?
Yes.
Well?
Well, it's not easy to say in a word.
If you lie to me, I'll break your neck.
I have no intention of lying to you. I was very touched by your sending it to me.
I know myself, but I want to hear it from you. I know it's terrible.
That's nonsense, and you know it's nonsense. In a strange, uncanny way, the play's fascinating. Your first act's wonderfully written.
Oh, Linda, darling, do you really think so?
You couldn't write anything terrible.
Linda, darling, I didn't want you to
only...
feel... Only what?
Gay, somehow I feel a revulsion from your play altogether because it's dominated by the idea of death.
But we're living in an era of death.
What if we are? Gay, don't turn your back on the gift you have, that rare gift of illuminating life with gaiety and understanding.
No, it's not that. That's not the trouble.
Then what?
Can't you see that if this play is no good, it's because I haven't actually been through it? I haven't been through anything. While I'm imagining charming variations of life, people are dying. I tell you, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of my work and sick of myself. I must get something clear and outside myself to be enlisted for. I'm sick of triviality, sick of ringing changes on what I've already written. And in my personal life, too. I improvise variations there, like Mandy.
It's Mandy, then. You want to get away from Mandy.
Oh, now, Linda.
Insufficient motive, I should think, for leaving the country.
It's like you to pick on that out of all I've said.
Gay, listen. I know perfectly well that if you had any idea you were excited about, you wouldn't go.
Well, I haven't any idea I'm excited. I haven't even an idea.
I have.
You have?
I think, I honestly think that I have one.
What is it?
Amanda and Me.
What are you talking about?
Write a play about us. The two opposite types of women in the life of a man, the builder-upper and the breaker-downer. The critical faculty versus the clinging vine. What every woman knows in reverse.
I see. You cast yourself for the superior role.
No, no, no. There's a lot to be said for Mandy. Great occasions, she believes, great loves make people exceed their capacities. Whereas the other woman says, stay in your little street, cultivate your garden. A playwright, you for instance, caught between these two points of view, which wins out in the end? Whom does he stay with?
Well, it would depend a good deal, I should think, on how the builder-upper's advice worked out.
Exactly.
Supposing, say, the play he wrote and produced under her influence were a great success.
Then I'd be sunk.
Might be interesting.
Right up your street.
Who would win out?
Who would win out?
If the play's a success, it's a toss-up.
Odds on Mandy.
And if it weren't, if it stinked.
What then?
Then he'd go to the builder-upper, certainly.
You think so? Why?
He'd never forgive the wife for being right.
Oh, gay. That's charming.
I hate you often because you know more than I do. Mandy massages my ego. It's very pleasant.
There, you see, it's right in your hand.
Well, I,
Excuse me, Miss Lindy.
Well, what is it, Clementine?
That Mr. Philo Smith is here to see you.
Philo Smith? What does that stuffed shirt want?
He wants to see Miss Lindy.
He's less a stuffed shirt than you think, Gay. He's recklessly, even insanely impulsive.
That tycoon.
He proposed to me last night.
Well, will I tell him you're coming, Miss Lindy?
Yes, Clementine.
Wait a minute, Clementine.
What is it, Gay?
It'll be a great marriage. The two critical faculties. The two skeptics. You'll produce a lot of question marks.
Is this what you wanted Clementine to hear?
No. No. Clementine, after you tell Mr. Smith that Miss Page will receive him, come back here and help me find my passport.
Well, Philo?
Last night must seem fantastic to you, Linda.
Not so fantastic as it must seem to you.
Yes, it's incredible to me also, and yet I went to sleep thinking of you. I woke thinking of you, and I'm 48. After two unsuccessful marriages, after a long renunciation of any idea of personal happiness, I tremble before you.
I'm very touched, Philo. I've been thinking of you.
To a conclusion?
I don't know. I'm tired, Philo. But I mustn't...
Where's my passport? Where the devil have you put it?
I haven't put it.
I gave it to you.
You didn't.
That Clementine doesn't know anything.
Say hello to Mr. Smith, darling.
Hello. I want my passport, Linda.
How do you do?
Perhaps the passport's in your studio.
Can't be. I never took it there.
Well, you might look in that little tin box in your closet. You throw things in there.
That's it. That's where you put it.
My husband's going to Poland, Philo.
Really? Why?
Fundamental experience.
Are you interested in what's going on in Europe, Mr. Smith?
Not particularly.
Or in Asia?
No. Oh, I'm interested as a student of human folly, but no more than that.
No more than that.
Yeah, you'll find your passport.
No, wait a minute. This is interesting. This beautiful detachment that Mr. Smith achieves is interesting. It doesn't interest you, Mr. Smith, that we just fought a war and that now some of the things we were fighting for are in peril? It doesn't interest you that starvation and famine and oppression are stalking the world like great beasts with slavering jaws? It doesn't interest you that man has created a weapon, the atomic bomb, which can destroy man and will destroy him if we don't learn how to cooperate with each other?
No, Mr. Estabrook. These things do not interest me except as they provide me with amusement.
Amusement?
Exactly. You see, I believe that man is an ungracious beast, not worth saving. I believe that man is bloodthirsty and contemptible. The great satirists, Voltaire and Swift, knew that. Your indignation is sentimental and romantic. It is even infantile.
I see. Well, Linda, I guess you and Mr. Smith here will be very happy, cuddled together in a great cocoon of detachment. You were saying the same things to me a little while ago.
No, no, I never said that. I never believed that. Philo, I suppose Gay is everything you say, sentimental, romantic, even infantile. And yet not altogether. Oh, I can't believe altogether. There are millions of anonymous people in the world who ask only to be permitted to live. Gentle, humble voices, unheard and unrecorded. In them one must believe. For them one must do illogical and quixotic things.
Linda.
You hate me?
No. No, Philo, I don't hate you.
But I have my answer now.
Yes.
I see. Well, I had no right to expect anything else.
I'd answer that, only I think I know who it is.
I'll
take it. Hello? Oh, yes. Well, he's busy at the moment. I think he'll be through very shortly.
Say goodbye to her for me, will
yes,
you, Mr.
I'll
Estabrook?
Tell him.
I will.
Yes,
I hope to see you again sometime.
Goodbye.
I'll tell him. All right, I will. I'll urge him.
Philo wanted me to say goodbye for him.
Do you think I heard him, Gay?
I hope so.
That was Mandy on the phone, you know.
I know. But never mind, Mandy. I got to talk to you, Linda.
I'm Miss Lindy. Yes, Mr. Lovell.
Linda, darling.
Tim.
Oh, Mr. Estabrook, I believe.
Listen, if I got to cope with you now, I've got to talk to Linda.
Yes, where Linda's concerned, you're so frightfully possessive.
You've got to clear out of here.
I'm not going to.
Linda, I've got to talk to you. It's important.
Shh, be quiet. The telephone.
Yes, be quiet, Gay.
Hello? Oh, yes, Mandy. Yes, he'll be down any minute. Yes, he's almost packed. But, Mandy, Pim's just dropped in. He'd love to come down and have a cocktail with you while you're waiting.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, he may? I'll tell him. Goodbye, Pim, be a darling.
I refuse absolutely to be a darling.
She's in the cocktail bar downstairs. You go down and have one drink with her.
Well, what do I get out of it?
One drink, didn't you hear her?
Pim, it's a great favor. I'll kiss you.
Well, come on.
This is nauseating.
There.
That kiss was more clinical than passionate, Linda.
I write lines like that, and I'm ashamed of it.
All right, I'm going. But one drink, remember.
Linda.
Yay?
I'm going to do it.
What?
The play. The idea you gave me. The two women, you and Mandy. But I see beyond it. Way beyond it. I see reflected through it the conflict of our times. I think it'll have some weight, some contemporary value.
Good, Gary.
And a wonderful part for you.
Oh, don't worry about me.
I must. Linda. Mandy. What shall I do about Mandy?
You can go to Poland with her. I can find your passport.
What are you trying to do, get rid of me?
Why not?
Because I love you.
Oh, Gay. Gay, darling.
Oh, Linda.
You'd better answer the phone, darling.
No, it's Mandy. It must be Mandy.
I know, and you've got to speak to her, Gay. You have to tell her.
But what? What shall I say? What?
You ought to know. You've got to write it. It's the curtain for your last act, isn't it?
The curtain has fallen on the Theatre Guild on the Air production of No Time for Comedy by S.N. Behrman, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation, starring Frederick March as Gay and Florence Eldridge as Linda, and featuring Walter Abel as Philo and Francis Fuller as Amanda. Other members of our cast included Roger Pryor as Pim, Gigi James as Clementine, and Jay Barney as the butler. And now, here is Roger Pryor with a word about next week's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, the Theatre Guild on the Air brings you a real event in radio. Their production of Gold by America's foremost playwright, Eugene O'Neill. Starred in this great melodrama will be the famous star of stage and screen, Raymond Massey, with Patricia Collins and Angela Lansbury. So be sure to be with us next week for the Theatre Guild on the Air production of Eugene O'Neill's Gold.
Remember, next week, Raymond Massey and Eugene O'Neill's famous drama, Gold, with Patricia Collins and Angela Lansbury. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. The Theatre Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Helburn, with Homer Fickett, director, Carol Irvin, production executive, and Armina Marshall, executive director of the radio department. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy, and the play was adapted by Robert Senadella. Frederick March and Florence Eldridge can currently be seen in the Broadway success Years Ago. Mr. March is also currently starred in Samuel Goldwyn's great motion picture, The Best Years of Our Lives. Walter Abel is currently starring in the Broadway play, Parlor Story. Your announcer, Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at this same time.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for now.